Your Day podcast for the big storylines, results, and controversies from the tennis world. Today is Wednesday, March 27th. We've reached the business end of the 2024 Miami Open as the quarterfinals are now set in the men's singles draw. Of course, our quarterfinal action has already begun on the women's singles side of things. Two of our matches played out on Tuesday. Of course, I want to break down each of those results for all of you tennis fans on today's show. And of course, I want to get into all eight of our round of 16 bouts on the men's side. Let's start with what, in my opinion, was the single biggest headline generated from Tuesday's action. It's the first time since 2009 that each of the top four seeds in the men's singles draw have all advanced to the quarterfinal round. Now, in 2009, it was a group you tennis fans may all be familiar with. Guys by the name of Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, Novak Djokovic, and Andy Murray, the top four seeds, each reaching the quarterfinals in 2009. I'm not sure if this year's group has that sort of gravitas, but I'm certainly excited for the potential prospect of semifinal bouts between Alcaraz and Zverev, Medvedev and Sinner, respectively. Each of the top four seeds, they all advanced in straight sets on Tuesday. They all looked the part of top four seed. And on today's show, obviously, I want to break down the mechanics of their victories, but then offer some perspective on what each of those top four guys have accomplished, not just on their way to this Miami Open quarterfinal round, but more broadly over the last 6 to 12 months, of course. You also have some surprise quarterfinalists in the draw. Certainly, I didn't have Fabian Marizan nor Thomas Mahach in my quarterfinals of the draw when I was forecasting how everything may play out in Miami, but each of them have looked so impressive on their way to the quarterfinals. For Mahach yesterday, a straight set win over fellow young riser Matteo Arnaldi. For Marizan, three sets over a very much in form Alex Diemenauer. Each guy continues to impress. We'll break down not only their round of 16 matches here on today's show, but again, how they've gotten to their respective new career highs in the live ranking over the course of the past year. And then, again, don't want to write off Grigor Dimitrov, who it feels like continues to be written off in terms of the conversation, who are the best of the best in the men's tennis world right now. If you don't have Grigor Dimitrov in your top 10, I'm going to disrespect your list. I think he's a top eight guy right now. Certainly the numbers indicate as much. His form yesterday, 7-6 in the third over Hubi Hurkacz. Come on now. That is a top eight worthy win at a venue like Miami. So we'll talk that. We'll talk about the relentless aggression of Nicolas Jarry and why on the right day the 28-year-old can give anyone a run for their money. Again, a lot learned from a busy round of 16 day in the men's singles draw. Of course, again, we'll get into all things Rybakina, Azarenka, three-set victories here on today's show as well. Dare I say, a loaded mini-break podcast for all of you listeners to enjoy, of course. As I alluded to yesterday, I am back in Indianapolis for the foreseeable future. Thus, I do expect our podcast schedule here, at least as it relates to the mini break podcast feed, to normalize over the course of the next few weeks. I will do my best to have episodes for all of you Monday through Friday. We'll mix in a few weekend episodes as well. Plenty of fun guests on the horizon. Again, I got a lot of good takes. There's a lot of good tennis happening in the world. So I don't know if they're good takes, but I have a lot of takes, I should say, to offer. So certainly happy to be back here doing so. Appreciate all of you listeners who have stuck with us through, dare I say, the variance of the release schedule over the course of the past 6 weeks. And obviously appreciate all of your support of our Crack Rackets venture over the course of the past years. And by the way, things we are up to that would distract me from recording these podcasts. We've got college tennis broadcast Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, pretty much every weekend until the end of the 2024 college tennis season. That includes this weekend, where Thursday, Friday, Sunday, we will be on ESPN+. We've got a Big 12 broadcast for you all on Thursday, ACC, SEC broadcasts on Friday and Sunday. Of course, a Big 10 broadcast for all of you on our Crack Rackets YouTube channel Sunday as well. So if you are ready to dive headfirst into the college tennis world. We've got the broadcast for you to do precisely that. Of course, we cover the college tennis world every week on the Great Shot podcast feed. We're back live on our YouTube channel Tuesday, Wednesday nights to cover all the Division I action. Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, we talk D1 women. Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern time, we talk D1 men. So that's on the horizon each and every week moving forward through the rest of this college tennis season. If you are interested, come check it out. I promise it's content you are all going to enjoy. And again, a thank you to all of you for your support, without which we would not have the opportunities we do today. That's what we're up to in the college tennis realm. Of course, as always, I will ask, like, rate, subscribe, review, not only this podcast, but the Great Shot podcast, Cracked Interviews feed, as well as our Cracked Rackets YouTube channel. You can follow us for the immediate updates, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. We're at Cracked Rackets. You want to message me directly, I am at A.L. Gruskin on Twitter. A shout out, as always, to Westhoff, and a shout out to the support we get from our friends at Tennis Point for this show. Remember, for the latest and greatest equipment at the best prices, tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15. All right, let's talk round of 16 Tuesday, plus a few women's singles quarterfinal bouts here on today's show. Let's start on the men's side of things. Thought the top four seeds were particularly impressive on Tuesday. Perhaps most of all, sneakily, was Sasha Zverev, the 26-year-old. He's just back to playing the sort of tennis he was pre-ankle injury before that 2022 French Open, where he was unequivocally one of the five best players in the world. I know I've been beating this drum relentlessly, and I keep repeating myself here on this show whenever Zverev comes up, but he's number five in the rankings for a reason. In a Djokovic-less event, he should be the number four overall seed, and you look at his run to this Miami quarterfinal. Again, he goes straight sets over Felix Auger-Aliassime, straight sets over Chris Eubanks, straight sets over Karen Khachanov. He's faced a total of five break points in three matches. He's been broken just once in six sets. By the way, that break came really early in that first set against Chris Eubanks, and he managed to get the break immediately back. He's serving lights out. I mean, again, you look for Zverev here over his last 52 weeks. He has just straight up made 71%, 71.2 if you want to be exact, of his first serves. This is a guy who isn't rolling in the first serve 115 miles per hour to set up just a baseline rally. No, this is a guy who routinely is hitting serves in the high 120, low 130 mile per hour range, and he makes them at over a 70% clip. Thus, it's not a surprise to hear he wins over 73% of his first serve points, 73.9% over his last 52 weeks. His ace percentage, by the way, 10%. So not only is he making 7 out of 10 first serves, of those first serves he makes, he's hitting an ace on 1 out of every 10 of them as well, meaning he's getting a free point about every service game that he plays. Last night against Khachanov, I mean, his plus one forehand was just as good as it can be hitting through the court. His backhand cross, backhand line, just all the different things he can do. He's back to moving just like an alien. 6 foot six people who are built in the stature with which Sasha Zverev is built shouldn't be as fluid in and out of corners and changing direction the way that Zverev is. The other component that has to be mentioned, not only, again, has the first serve percentage improved to the point where, yeah, the second serve is shaky, but you just don't think about it as much because he lands so many first serves, but he has gone from a bad volleyer with good technique to a good volleyer with good technique, and that was a developed practice over time. That is not something Sasha Zverev, who walked onto the ATP Tour with all sorts of skills, that was not one of them. Watching him knife off backhand volleys and flatten them out and hit them through the court and find short angles, find half volleys, work his way forward whenever he got Khachanov stretched, because Khachanov isn't the most fluid in the outer thirds and will leave some passes up for you to knife off at the net. Zverev took advantage of every opportunity available to him. Again, physically was just able to extend rallies against Eubanks, FAA, absorb their first strikes to where they weren't dynamic enough to hurt him either. And now he's got, again, by ranking, his lowest opponent to date in Marazan in the quarterfinals. But You know, again, more broadly, how has Zverev gotten back to this number five ranking in the world? Well, since the start of last year's French Open, where he made the semifinals, really his announcement, I'm back at the top of the game, back to returning to my peak form. Since the start of that French Open, Zverev's 56-18 overall. That's a 76% win percentage. He's holding 87.9% of the time, again, winning 74% of his first serve points, hitting an ace percentage over 10%, all these different things, dominating with the first serve, top 10 in hold percentage for 9 months now. He's played 19 total events. He's made 14 quarterfinals or further at those 19 events. That's not top 20 stuff. That's top 8 stuff. Dare I say, that's top 5 stuff. And it matches what I'm seeing with my eyes. Like, again, Alcaraz blitzing him the way he did in that Indian Wells quarterfinal, that kind of put a damper on the Zverev return to peak form hype. Obviously, he wasn't great between Australia and the start of Indian Wells either, but keep in mind, he should have won his Australian Open semifinal against Medvedev, was up 2-0, was clearly the better player through the first 2.5 sets, and, you know, again, let that third set slip away from him. But keep in mind, the match before that, he had beaten Alcaraz fairly handily in 4 sets. It wasn't Alcaraz's best day, but still, how many guys can do that nowadays? It's not many, and, you know, again, it was another victory for him over Alcaraz at a major after he had beaten him at the French Open back in 2022. He beat Sinner at last year's U.S. Open. Really, that's the last loss almost Sinner has taken. Not true. We'll get to the Sinner numbers in a little bit. Here's the point. Sasha Zverev, since the start of last year's French Open, 56-18 overall. You look for him, he's 14-11 against top 20 opponents, 8-10 against the top 10. It's as good of a resume as anyone who isn't Djokovic, Alcaraz, Sinner, or Medvedev right now. He is the 5th best player in the world. Cruised past Khachanov last night. It's going to be a fascinating matchup with Fabian Marozan, who, again, Marozan 6-4, love 6-6-1. He knocks off Demon Hour. The only 3 times he was broken was all within that 6 love second set that he lost. You look for Marozan now, 44-27 overall over his last 52 weeks, but let's just lock in on the tour level sample size during that stretch. He's 22-15 overall during that stretch. Breaking serve 24.6% of the time. That's a top 25 number, obviously, in reaching the quarterfinals here. His first at the 1,000 level, the 24-year-old up to a new career high, 38 in the live rankings. Again, where are his wins coming from when you look at his tour level success over these last 52 weeks, 22-15 overall? He's now made the quarters of 2 different Masters events. Did it in Shanghai with wins over Demon Hour and Casper Ruud. Now he does it here in Miami with wins over Demon Hour and Runa. Indian Wells round of 16, a win over Nicolas Jarry, who's now here in the quarterfinals of Miami. Like, that's another age, that a win that has aged particularly well. He made Rome round of 16 in May, where he beat Lechecka, beat Carlos Alcaraz. Like, those are 3, maybe even 4, I should say, if you want to include Rome, significant Masters runs for a 24-year-old who, in his career, again, 22-15 over his last 52 weeks, he's 22-17 for his career in tour-level matches. It's all come of late, and it's been instant success, and it makes sense. Marozan is just smooth with it. Like, doesn't have an eye-popping weapon that jumps off the screen and makes you think, oh yeah, this guy is a lock to be elite moving forward. But he's pretty good at everything. The harder it comes back at him, the harder it's coming back at you. He plays the short angles, the slices, disrupts rhythms because he's just a tricky, tricky opponent to face. He's October 8th. Shout out to a fellow October birthday. You know I love that. But the results are real. Like, again, he's done it at 4 Masters events now, round of 16 or further, quarterfinals, quarterfinals Shanghai, and now quarterfinals here in Miami. And again, this is a guy with a win over Alcaraz on clay as well. He's smooth with it. Does he have the weapon to hit through Sasha Zverev? Because Zverev's fine with the track meets, and Zverev's moving forward, again, better with each and every passing match, so I think the drop shots will be a little bit less effective on him. You know, you got to take time away. You got to pressure the forehand. You got to force Zverev into getting uncomfortable and forcing the nerves to manifest. Marozan can hang. I think Zverev gets through in straight sets. Tennis Abstract has him as an 83.1% favorite to do so. Still, it's a massive moment for Fabian Marozan. Knocks off Demonauer for the second time. Again, a three-set win. Disappointing for Demonauer. Maybe his most disappointing loss of the first third of the season. Still, Marozan is through. Sets up with date with Zverev. That is how one of your top four seeds advanced in two of your round of 16 matchups overall. Moving on, back to Jannik Sinner, because, you know, again, I mentioned that U.S. Open loss to Zverev. One of six losses Sinner has taken since the start of Wimbledon last season. Let me say that again. Since July 3rd, 2023, Jannik Sinner, 51-6 overall. That is an 89% win percentage. He is flirting, folks, with the 90% win percentage club, excuse me. And I've told you how elite that list is. There's a Borg season, maybe a couple Borg seasons. There's a couple Federer seasons, Djokovic, Nadal. Those are the only four players who have ever flirted with a 90% win percentage for a 52-week span. Now, again, Sinner's isn't going to be a direct calendar year because it starts with last Wimbledon, but we've seen his clay court success. Like, this is a guy with the runway ahead of him. Could he not be 70-11 by the time we get to the end of the French Open and through the early grass court events to the start of Wimbledon? Absolutely. I'm asking him to go 19-5 over the course of the next 3 months. That seems very, very plausible for the 22-year-old Sinner. And then again, once you eclipse the 70 win club in a 52-week time span, you're talking about the elite of the elite Mount Rushmore type players. And I know Sinner only has one major title during this stretch. But 51-6, holding serve 91.1% of the time for 9 months consecutively, 27.1 break percentage. Again, that's a top 10 number. You look for him against top 20 opponents, 21-5. You look for him against the top 10, 12-3. You look at for him in total terms of events played. He's played 12 total events. He's made the quarterfinals or further in seven of them. He's won five of them and made another final in there as well. That's ridiculous. Again, 51-6 overall since the start of Wimbledon last year. O'Connell was swinging so freely through his forehand, was moving forward to the net, was just rushing Sinner the way you have to rush him at the start of the match, and then it didn't work anymore. And then his, you know, Sinner's pace was too much. 4-3 win for Sinner to set up a quarterfinal bout with the rising 23-year-old from the Czech Republic, Thomas Mahach. Mahach up to a new career high, number 43, as he reaches his first quarterfinal at the 1,000 level. You look for Mahach, 17-9 in his last 52 weeks of tour-level play. Two-thirds rule, folks, and, you know, he already made a quarterfinal to start this year in Marseille. You look for him last year, quarterfinal in Houston on clay, quarterfinal in Stockholm late October, so four quarterfinals on his resume right now, one of them being a 1,000-level event. He made the third round of the Australian Open to start this year as well. It's top 56 months, no doubt about it, and you look for Mahach, you know, again, it's not the most eye-poppingly explosive, but he is twitchy. He's quick everywhere, snaps backhands through the court faster than you expect. You leave something hanging on the forehand side, he's going to capitalize on that. Comfortable moving forward again. The second serve hangs, but whose second serve doesn't hang? He's another October birthday. Shout out October 13th. He's a real, you know, again, I've been a Mahach guy for a while. Go check out the 4 years of podcasts we've been doing with Damien Kust and how frequently I would bring him and Lachechka up as two young Czechs to watch on the rise early in their careers. Mahach is just solid off both wings and springy enough to where, no, it's not an eye-popping weapon, but it's pretty good at everything. Mahach now 57-25 overall over his last 52 weeks. Didn't face a break point against Matteo Arnaldi in his 3-3 round of 16 win. Now, again, there was no clear-cut game plan for Arnaldi to execute, and I think when that becomes the case, oftentimes he finds himself searching and pressing, and, you know, again, I think the plus-one regimen isn't where it needs to be right now for Matteo Arnaldi for him to reach his upside. No clear-cut, hey, this is the thing I turn to that I know I'm going to do with repeated success to make life easy for myself. Mahach was a little crisper with his plus one combinations. Thus, he's the one advancing to the round quarterfinal bout with Jannik Sinner. Sinner, a 91.5% favorite, will be the first career head-to-head between the two. Other two quarterfinals, both going to be really fun. Again, Daniil Medvedev, 6-in-love winner over Dominic Kofor. Kofor played about as well as could be asked in that first set, and yet I could watch Daniil Medvedev hit ad-side backhand returns from 92 feet behind the baseline, and the angles he's able to find, the spots he's able to hit, it's just jaw-droppingly excellent. And it's another semifinal for Daniil Medvedev, quarterfinal for him, and at a significant hardcourt event. Again, that's who he is, a tier one hardcourt guy. He's got a tough matchup up next, though. He's going to take on a Nicolas Jarry, who's been really good over his last 52 weeks. Jarry, 39-24 overall, all of it tour-level action. In reaching the quarterfinals here in Miami, he's back up to number 22 in the live rankings, four off of his career high. Here's the big thing for Nicolas Jarry. Last 52 weeks, he's into his ninth quarterfinal during that stretch of time. Where have those quarterfinals come? Shanghai Masters, Miami Masters, Beijing 500-level event, Halle, I believe a 500-level event, if not, a bunch of other 250s mixed in. But nine quarterfinals, you're a top 25 guy if you do that over 52 weeks across various surfaces. And it just speaks to his weapons work everywhere. Like, you look for him, he's holding serve 86.7% of the time over his last 52 weeks. You look for what he was able to do in his 6-3 win over Casper. He faced two break points. He won 88% of his first serve points, double-digit aces. Again, when the first serve is landing, you're just going to pop something up on the return. And he is so proficient with the first forehand, so proficient with the backhand line. Nicolas Jarry knows exactly who he is. He moves sneaky well, not just for a guy who's 6'6", but for a guy who's as thick as Nicolas Jarry is. Again, he can scoot around the court. He's going to have some free swings at the forehand. Again, Medvedev giving him the space that he's willing to give. Yari's going to get some clean cuts. I don't know how much gas he has left in the tank because he has played some physical matches to date. Three sets with Draper in round one, that was 3.5 hours. Sabathville, three sets, that was 2 hours, 59 minutes. His hour 50-minute straight set match against Casper Ruud, his easiest match to date. Look, you need fresh legs facing Daniil Medvedev. The crowds for Nicolas Jarry are special. Obviously, heavier Spanish, Mexican, South American, Spanish-speaking, excuse me, is what I meant to say, Spanish-speaking population in Miami. And so to see the support for all the South American players, to see the support, it's just special. And again, Jarry is the beneficiary from that, no doubt about it. He's playing in a home environment in Miami. Maybe they can propel him forward against Medvedev, who's 1-0 in the career head-to-head. And you look at the Tennis Abstract singles forecast, Medvedev an 89.3% favorite. Advantage Medvedev, certainly he's the favorite. I think we're going to get a top four semifinal showdown of the top four seeds, excuse me, so that guarantees it's probably not happening, but shout out to Medvedev, Jarry, each advancing. And then top quarterfinal, Carlos Alcaraz. It was very athletic, his matchup with Lorenzo Musetti, a 3-3 win for Alcaraz. Certainly Musetti can extend points, improvise with the best of them. His drop shots over Alcaraz's drop shots, who could pull off more successful drop shots, who could pull off more improvisational athletic volleys. It was a fun competition. It was never in doubt. There was just nothing Musetti could do to penetrate the court and make Alcaraz consistently uncomfortable. That's why the drop shot was the play Musetti had to turn to. Alcaraz 3-3. It's 9 match wins in a row. I mean, he's back to world number one form. But he's taken on a top 8 Grigor Dimitrov. Again, Dimitrov 3-6, 6-3, 7-6 over Hubi Hurkacz. Each guy, one break of serve in the respective sets that they won. That third set, again, no breaks in it on its way to the 7-3 tiebreak win for Dimitrov. I know there was the controversial Hurkacz called for a net touch with his foot, but his foot certainly touched the net. And you can't do that, even on a put-away volley, as easy as his was. Thus, the point should have been awarded to Dimitrov. I said it yesterday. I went through all the stats, so I'm not going to repeat myself doing that again. But Dimitrov is moving as well as he has ever moved in his career. And when the movement is right, the shot-making for Grigor has never been in doubt. I will continue to say he's just hitting his backhand now better than I think he ever has through it, over the top of it in his career. Look, the head-to-head is 3-1 Alcaraz, and you think the explosive nature of Alcaraz's forehand should really give Grigor some problems. But remember, Grigor beat him in 3 in Shanghai at the end of last season. So, last head-to-head win. Advantage Grigor, that's the closest projected matchup by Tennis Abstract Singles Forecast. Alcaraz, still a significant favorite, 69.8%. But again, they think that's going to be a real battle. By the way, right now, Sinner, 44.5% favorite to win the event. Alcaraz, 22.4%. Medvedev, 19.4%. Zverev, 8.8%. And then they just kind of put their hands up and say, if it's one of the other four guys, they will be shocked. I certainly will be as well. Fun matchups across the board in Miami. Again, four of the top five players, clearly. A Grigor Dimitrov, who I think has been a top eight guy for 9 months consecutively. And then some rising guys, Marazan, Jari, Mahach, who are clearly all playing their best tennis over the course, not just of this week, but the last 52 weeks as well. So things to get excited about if you are a pro tennis fan moving forward. Should be a really fun finish to everything we see unfold on the men's side in Miami. On the women's side, 2 3-set matches to kick off quarterfinal play. Let's start with Elena Rybakina, whom, again, it just felt like it was always going to be one of those Rybakina weeks. She earns a 7-5, 6-7, 6-4 victory over Maria Sakkari. Since winning her first Wimbledon title, Elena Rybakina now 87-27 overall since the start of that week, 76% win percentage. She's 47-13, 78% win percentage over her last 52 weeks. And, you know, again, you look for her since Wimbledon 2022, she's now made into her 11th hard court semifinal. You look at where they've come, second time here in Miami during that stretch. She's got an Indian Wells semifinal, Abu Dhabi, Doha, obviously Australian Open mixed in there as well, the 500 level event in Ostrava back in 2022. They're significant runs at significant events. She's a tier one hard court player. No ifs, ands, or buts about it as it relates to Elena Rybakina. You know, she should have won that match in straight sets, had match points, 7-5, 5-4 up, Sakkari serving 15-40. Now, the Sakkari serve plus one combination to fight off the 30-40 match point, which was match point number two. No shame in that game. Like, that's just really well executed by Maria Sakkari. That'll happen. The missed backhand on the first match point, I'm sure she'd want that one back. But again, Sakkari is just hanging tough. Sakkari is back to playing her best tennis, and that best tennis is when her serve, her forehands as weapons are accentuated by the physicality, the relentlessness she brings every point, and that's just the gear she seems to have found once again. She wanted no part of the Rybakina forehand last night, did such a good job of pinning Rybakina in the backhand corner, did such a good job of forcing Rybakina into pressing the issue, into, again, generating unforced errors, because she knew the longer the point went, the more likely Sakkari had the chance to win that point. But when Rybakina found first forehands, it's just so overwhelming. Again, Rybakina had match points, could have closed it out 6-3. The ace tee that Sakkari hits at 30-40. Again, you clap your racket, you say too good, the first match point, whatever. That Sakkari was able to, Rybakina serving 5-4, having blown four match points on the Sakkari serve. For her to close it out at 15 as definitively as she did, that's just kind of proof Rybakina is in form this week. And, you know, again, forced to withdraw from Indian Wells due to illness. She wants to make up for that lack of opportunity that she had in part one of the Sunshine Swing, make up for it here in Miami. She's played really good ball on her way to the semifinals. Got pushed. Again, this, I know Sakkari loses in this quarterfinal bout, but this Sunshine Swing, she's one of the biggest winners. Has to get an A for her finals, quarterfinal appearances, and was much better in defeat this week than she was at the last event. Still, Rybakina through to, again, her 11th hard court semifinal since that 2022 Wimbledon. The number says it, 47-13 overall over her last 52 weeks. That's top five tennis, certainly, off the racket of Elena Rybakina. For Sakkari, you know, again, you look for her since making that DC final at the start of last summer. She's 26-7 overall during that time span. You throw out her three Cancun losses to Sabalenka, Rybakina, Pegula, which were all bonus matches, of course. She's 26-14 overall. That sounds a lot. You know, again, that's right next to the two-thirds rule. Yeah, she lost the three consecutive matches, Avanesian, Kirsteia, Noskova, Australian Open through the start of that Middle East stretch, but has righted the ship here during the Sunshine Swing, and again, I think can hold the head high given how she fought off those four match points, how she competed last night against Rybakina. Obviously, for Rybakina, the tournament continues, and next up, she's going to take on a Victoria Azarenka, who quietly, very quietly, since the start of Wimbledon last year, 23-12 overall is Victoria Azarenka, the 34-year-old, into another semifinal here in Miami. I believe she now has the third most semifinals at 1,000-level events in WTA Tour history. And remember, they started counting them as 1,000-level events in 2009. 7-6, 1-6, 6-3 victory over Yulia Putintseva. Yeah, the match was 2 hours, 55 minutes. The second set was a blowout, but it was always on Azarenka's racket. Putintseva was counterpunching. Putintseva was passing very well, was pressuring Azarenka, forcing Azarenka to be uncomfortable and try and swing outside of herself. But Azarenka's weapons were always the biggest on the court. Azarenka was always the one when she needed to, particularly end of that first set, steady the ship. You know, again, find the lines, be patient, wait for the right ball to move forward behind. Obviously, they had the electronic line calling controversy in this match that forced play to be stopped as they had a power outage and otherwise wouldn't have had line calling available to them. But it's a big moment for Azarenka, who has been knocking on the door of things like this. Round of 16 Australian Open, round of 16 Wimbledon, you know, quarterfinals Guadalajara, quarterfinals in Doha. Now she gets the significant, again, semifinal run here over the last 52 weeks. And when she's healthy, the numbers have loved her for 2 years consecutively. She almost never dips out of that top 25 club. She's in there right now. Now there's a corresponding result to go along with it. Again, wins over Stearns, Chin Wen, Bolter, and Putintseva to set up the date with Elena Rybakina. Rybakina 3-0 for what it's worth in the career head-to-head between the two. Of course, top half of the draw, those quarterfinals going here on Wednesday. Alexandrova will take on Pegula. Pegula 1-0 in the career head-to-head. Garcia will take on Danielle Collins. Collins, here's your fun fact, 3-0 in that career head-to-head. Last season on the job, her first big 1,000-level semifinal came in Miami, so some nice symmetry for her to get another big run here in her last season. Can she make the magic happen? How fun would a Pegula-Collins semifinal in Miami be? A sneaky fun All-American matchup. That's where things stand right now on the women's side of things. And, you know, again, that's the headline action. I know that's what people are mostly locked into. Of course, if you're looking for your update on what's happening at the collegiate level, go check out the Great Shot podcast. Your quick challenger level update on everything going down this week. Top seed in Sao Leopoldo, still alive. Juan Pablo Varillas, the birthday brother. He gets a round one victory, 5-6. It is worth noting, though, number two seed Tiago Monteiro knocked out 7-5 in the third by former junior slam champion and still young Brazilian Orlando Luz. You've got former USC All-American Daniel Kukerman advancing to round number two. Former All-Americans Emilio Gomez, Liam Draxel knocked out in round number one, as was former junior Australian Open champion, finalist, young American Bruno Cusijarro, who qualified for the main draw but knocked out in round number one. In Naples, top two seeds have yet to get underway, but Federico Coria, Luca Nardi will do so today. You did get wins from seeds like Fognini, Martyr, Herbert on day number one. The only seed knocked off, Jambor Piros, your number six seed. Over in San Luis Potosi, your top two seeds, Thiago Torrente, James Duckworth, each advancing to round number two. The most fun second round matchup there. How about the date between Dennis Kudla, the elder statesman of American men's tennis, taking on Canadian veteran Vasek Pospisil. Good wins for former Baylor All-American Matias Soto in round number one, former Florida All-American Oliver Crawford, former NC State All-American Lexi Gallardo, all advancing to round two. And then in Girona, I believe we had some withdrawals, so no top seed, but Pedro Martinez, your number two seed, was through to round number two, as were the six and seven seeds. Your seeds knocked out in round number one. Number fourth seed, Alberto Ramos Vinolas, knocked out on day one. Still have some round one matches, though, to wrap up there. That's everything happening at the challenger level. That's everything I think you need to know as we head into Wednesday, March 27th here in the tennis world, of course. We will be back tomorrow, though, to update you on everything that unfolds on a quarterfinal Wednesday at the Miami Open, as well as elsewhere in the tennis world. Of course, if you're looking for more of a fix, though, in the meantime, we will be live Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern time on our Crack Rackets YouTube channel to break down everything happening in the Division I men's college tennis world. Of course, a shout-out, as always, to our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, for the of an editing job. job he does day in, day out, making all of our content possible. Shout out to him. A shout out as well to the support we get from our dear friends at Tennis Point. Tennis-point.com. The promo code is CR15 for all of the latest and greatest products in the tennis world. With that said, for our fantastic super producer, Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Tennis Point, from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. You know what we say? That's the break. We'll talk to you all tomorrow. Thanks, everyone.